is Monday morning of January 4th, 2021. I want to say good morning to everyone in front of me, and Be'ezrat Hashem, we have what to do today. Last week, we spoke about Rabbi Young and Moriah Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik, and I mentioned, and everyone says it, that we have to be Moida LaKadosh Baruch Hu, that the Rav wasn't elected president. So Jack asked, why do we have pity on the Rav? Why not on Dr. Young? And here I have to tell you, Jack, there's a basic difference. Rabbi Young was rabbi of a large shul. Rabbi Lamb was rabbi of a large shul. Rabbi Ari Berman was once rabbi of West Side, of the Jewish center on the west side of a large shul. What is a rabbi? A rabbi is a teacher, a preacher, a fundraiser, an administrator, a sociologist, a psychologist. When you become president of Yeshiva University, all you're doing is transferring. Binyamin, you with me? You're transferring from a smaller shul to a world-class central synagogue. That's what YU is. There wasn't any difference between what Rabbi Lamb or Rabbi Berman or Rabbi Young did as rabbi of Jewish Center, except the stress was infinitely more, but they were able to handle it. You see, Rabbi Lamb becomes president a little older than Rabbi Revel or Rabbi Belkin, and he was able to handle it extremely well. The tragedy with the Rav is very simple. He was a Rebbe in the classroom. He first began giving Shiurim of May of 1941. Moshele, go and dream what would become of the Rav as a result of that classroom. To be Rebbe in a classroom, let's say it straight and let's say it right. People ask me, how much time do you put in preparation for your Shiurim? I can't even answer it. This is a lifetime of preparation. All that I've learned and all that I've studied, and you got to be ongoing. The Rav faced, beginning in 1941, the brightest young people in the United States. And he had to learn, he had to prepare. You can't just come in and give a sermon and give a shiur that you gave a year earlier and 2 years earlier. What a challenge, what a difference. And you don't have to believe me. Open up, there's a guy I know named Rakefet. He put two volumes out in the Rav. And open up volume 2, where the Rav talks about the debt he owes his Talmidim at Yeshiva University. And the Rav says it all. When you get involved with this type of teaching, this type of learning, you cannot be president of an institution. May I quote the Rav, the Yiddish he taught me, Untveda are, one or the other. You can't do both at the same time. And Vaharaya, you want a proof? It's very simple. Rabbis Revel and Belkin are the simplest proof. When they became president of the yeshiva, each one tried to keep on saying a shiur. Rabbi Revel was able to because the yeshiva was not that big yet. So he managed to give a shiur in Choshen Mishpat, I believe it was once a week, but he was never really a Rebbe surrounded by Talmidim day in and day out. Rabbi Belkin, who was the most popular Rebbe in the yeshiva in the 30s into the 40s, beloved. I wish I could bring Rav Nachum Buman to tell you about his Rebbe, Rav Shmuel Belkin. But 1 year he tried to continue saying shiur, couldn't go beyond that. So that's the difference. Rabbi Young would have remained Rabbi Young, and he would have been able to take Jewish Center and 1,000 times more responsibility, but the concepts are the same. The Rav would have become a different person, totally. An inability when you can't prepare shiurim properly. I don't want to boast, and there are people who walked in now that their great uncle was my student, their parents were my students. I never gave a shiurim in my life where I wasn't prepared. And when people call me to speak on topics from when I was younger, and I would accept occasionally speaking outside of the classroom, I had much more energy. I would never take a topic that I was a tyro in. If they want me to speak on medicine and halakha, I said, that's not me. You have to go to Rabbi Rasna, Dr. Rasna. You have to go to people who are experts. What I'm an expert in, I will speak on. But boy, do I prepare. And this is the answer. Okay. The other thing I want to mention, Jack, you with me? You understand what I said? Accepted? Okay. I'm happy to see, because you asked a good question, and maybe I took for granted that you understood what I was driving at. Okay. The other thing I want to say, and I'm reading now, I had a student many years ago, before the people sitting in front of me were born, Pearl Preschel, one of the greatest students I ever had. I had a brother, Shmuel, and I had Pearl. Pearl was really a Bren. And it turned out after the interview with me in Ami magazine, she wrote a letter. She was one of those that wrote a letter to the editor about what she gained from me so many years ago. I think it's well more than 40 years. So I've been in correspondence with her. I wrote her a letter to thank her. If someone has something nice to say about you, believe me, you have to thank them. Pearl sent me 3 volumes that she's edited of her father's collected writings. Dr. Tuvia Preschel, a Yudapeyish Talmud Chacham, who wound up teaching at the seminary. He and his wife, I'll give the wife credit, because it's basically the wife who raises the children, 4 wonderful children in America. Dr. Shmuel, my student, lives in Lakewood. Pearl Herzog, she also has a PhD, lives in Lakewood. A son who's a psychiatrist, I believe, lives in the New York area. And there's a son who came to Israel, I believe it was Netzach Yisrael. Chagai, I met him decades ago, and he never stopped learning. He's been learning ever since in Yerushalayim. So I'm reading his collected writings, and if you're familiar with Rakepit's work on the Rav, there's one area where I quote the Rav, where the Rav quotes the Beit Halevi, his great-grandfather, that his great-grandfather said, if you say a Chiddush, and you find someone else says it, you know you're on the right path. And people who learn and they reach a certain conclusion, you're the happiest person in the world when you see your chiddush others are saying too. It shows you're thinking properly. So I want to say, and he gives many examples of that, of others who have said it before the Beit Halevi, before the Rav said it, before Rakefet published the name of the Rav. So I want to say I was extremely happy. Last week's class, I spoke about that both viewpoints are right, to belong to Synagogue Council, not to belong. It's the hardest question in which you can give answers. And you remember I preached a sermon, what I would say if I could speak to Reform and Conservative. On the other hand, I could never be part of Limud. I always said I can't participate. Next door is a Reform rabbi, here's a Conservative rabbi, take your choice. But I understand very well Rabbi Lamb or Rabbi Riskin, who would say to me, Aaron, you're out of your mind. We have a chance to speak and talk Torah to people who have never heard it and will never hear it unless we speak out. What's the difference? What's going on next door? So these are 2 valid points of view. So I want to thank my dear student, Dr. Bill Gvirtz, who told me he was in London. He's no youngster, Dr. Gritz. He's catching up to my age. And he describes how he was in London negotiating with British Telecom on behalf of AT&T. He worked, had a very big position at AT&T. Mm-hmm. And he was there almost 2 weeks a month. And he got to know Rabbi Sachs. He stayed in London for Shabbos. He davened in the shul. And right at that time, Limud was beginning in England. And Rabbi Sachs did not participate. He said he could not. Nevertheless, his sermon was about the need for a proper perspective and the ability to see both sides of the issue. So, Baruch Hashem, I don't have to go further. I can say with joy that Noach Shapiro, I can say with joy that Baruch Shekivanti Ladas Gedolim. And that's a hard position. It's a difficult position to take. But I think if we care about Torah with all our heart and soul, it's the only position we can take. We can't push the non-observant Jews away. Today they're Tinokot Shenishbu to the second power, the third power. When I was growing up, it was only to the first power. But today, with the brainwashing of liberalism, what's going on in the world, it is frightening. I just saw a video was sent to me of an opening prayer in Congress where the man ends off, "Amen, a woman." The idiot that "Amen" has something to do with a man and that you're spitting in a woman's face. I don't know. I grew up among Gedolei Yisrael. The respect they had for their wives was indescribable. Okay? When we had a problem with the Rav, we went crying. You know, you read Washington, you studied Washington. We went crying to the Rebbetzin. We knew, and she told the Rav what to do. He's like a yingle. He would shake and do whatever his wife. He dedicated lonely man of faith to his wife. Look what he writes about her. Reb Moshe Feinstein, I mean, you can't imagine his wife. It's a different world. Ribbono Shel Olam, who would even think that Gedolei Yisrael look down upon women? Don't honor women. Open up the Rambam. Hilchat Isha, Perek Tetvav, Halacha Yetet, Halacha Chaf. I've given many shirim on it. Okay, but it's a difficult position because it's easy to say no and easier to say yes. It's difficult where you say each individual question has to be weighed in accordance with circumstances, who you are, where it is, etc., and the time it's happening. Okay. Nevertheless, I stand on what I said about Agudat Yisrael. That statement, such intellectual dishonesty, plain and simple. If you sit in the Knesset, you can sit in the World Zionist Organization. They're both, I don't believe we need a World Zionist Organization. I'm very upset that people living in Teaneck have a say, people living in Flatbush have a say over JNF and Keren Hayesod and all that goes on in Israel. But if this is the reality, at least let's see that the say is a Teredic say in accordance with our life, our tradition, our past, and ultimately our only future. And I stand on what I said, and I hope someone will show it to some of the Moetzei Gedolei HaTorah. I know many of them, they know me. If we don't want a reform temple at the Kotel, pay your shekel and vote. We're now shifting gears and coming into a totally different world. But I want to introduce it. I want to explain to you what I'm going to be doing. I'm going to introduce it. I got a letter. Once again, I'm talking Dr. Bill Gvirtz. Dr. Bill Gvirtz is a very prominent family. His son-in-law is very prominent in Reitz. He was just appointed. He's in charge of the rabbinic program, the rabbis. He's related to Rabbi Hecht. He's a Torah Vadas graduate. He's a Torah Vadas graduate. His sister is married to another Torah Vadas graduate, Julie Berman. I trust you've all heard the name. If you haven't heard the name, please make believe you did, Ellie, so the ignorant pass for the wise. You're dealing here with quite an individual, quite a family. So he sent me an article he published on, I guess it's his website. Everyone has a website. It's beyond comprehension. You can wind up with the computer. You do nothing else all day. But is there a word for jumping around from website to website? Scanning the computer. Is there a better word? Or they have invented a better word? Scanning the computer? I don't know. You tell me. How would you say it?
Surfing
the computer, like surfing in the surfing in the ocean, like the waves. You're going, all right, hey, nothing on me. So he has here an article, A Long-Needed Divorce. And he explains why he's divorcing his alma mater. He's a Paravidas graduate. And how angry he is at Paravidas. And here are some of the reasons he gives. The first reason, you can tell he's a Talmud of mine, because you all know how much I suffer from this. I still shudder, I shake, when I think about the fact that the Chafetz Chaim, the famous picture of the Chafetz Chaim sitting and talking with his son, and standing behind them is the Chafetz Chaim's wife, and they blocked out her face. I can't even talk about it. It's a desecration of everything holy, everything sacred. That the Chafetz Chaim's wife is lewd, and that we're lewd, and every man is a lewd animal. I can't talk about it. It hurts. It just hurts that people have... These are minds that are supposed to teach Torah. These are minds that are disoriented, decrepit. It's minds that are debauched. Use that word. So anyway, in the 50th anniversary of his high school graduation class, they published a booklet. And of course, one of the most prominent rabbeim who ever taught in the high school of Torah Vadas was Rav Avram Palm. I think some of you know how close I am to the Palm family. When Avram's brother remarried, who was Masada Kedushin? A guy named Aaron Rakefet. So after his wife died, he was widowed. I even spoke to the children because my mother remarried. I said, you have to let your parents remarry. He brought me to speak to the children. They were a little upset. It's a compliment to your first spouse because it shows you were so happily married, you can't go on without being married. So they blocked out a picture of Avram's wife sitting next to him. Her face, she's over 80 years of age. They blocked out. That's one thing that troubled him. I'll leave the second point he makes for last, because the second point becomes very important in today's lecture. Then he cites a biography that they put out, that they mention that Rav Aaron Cutler came to America in 1941, and he brought the Briska Derech to America. No, my dear students, have you listened to Rakefet's lectures? Have you read any of his writings? Take Rakefet Aaron Chelek Aleph, the piece on the Mechita Eloi. 1922, September 1st, 1922, the boat docked, and the greatest gong to arrive in America until that time got off the boat, not to schnorr in America, not to raise funds, to teach at Yeshiva Shabtzchokhanan, the Talmud Muvak of Reb Chaim Briska. So you tell me, Reb Aaron came 40 years later, how many, 20 years later? But not only that, who came after the Mechita? He died in 28. No, for 1 year, Reb Shimon Shkup said Sherman the yeshiva, right or wrong. Rakefet published the picture in Revel of Reb Shimon Shkup sitting in front of the yeshiva. All right, that's before photomontage. Today with a computer, you can take you can take a picture of Rakefet, give him a straight nose, make him look handsome, give him back hair, what you can do today with the computer. That doesn't count. But in a picture out of 1929 it is, wow. And then tell me, who gave his first year in the yeshiva, December 1929? Reb Moshe Soloveitchik. Who are we talking about? Reb Chaim's son. and Reb Aaron, I mean, I love Reb Aaron, no way, but to state and publish lies like this, wow, something really the matter with, this is Torah. Then I'll go a step further. I'm quoting Bill Gwirtz. When they celebrated the 100th anniversary of Teira Vadas recently. So Tova Lichtenstein attended, Dr. Tova Lichtenstein, in honor of her son. Tova is not a Teira Vadas person, but her son is becoming Rosh Yeshiva. She attended. If she attended, the Burmans attended. That was Aaron Lichtenstein's closest friend, Chaver, Chavruta, Smicha together, Julie Berman, and Dasi. And if Dasi attended, her brother attended, Bill Gvirtz. And they gave out a booklet, the Torah Vadas History, prominent graduates. And could you believe it, among the prominent graduates who are not mentioned, Normy Lamb and Julie Berman. Now, let's look at all the, we'll mention some of the names. Torah Vadas has many prominent graduates. I don't think there's anyone more prominent, maybe equal. But what Rabbi Dr. Norman Lamb accomplished in life? What Rabbi Julius Berman, the claims committee, the restitution, the money they got from Germany, hundreds of millions of dollars went through his hands, right or wrong? What a giant! Heads and shoulders above the crowd, and they are not mentioned. All right, now I want to come to the last reason. At his 50th anniversary high school dinner, speakers were speaking about the name Teira Vadas. And they were speaking, Torah is Torah, all right, we all understand that. What is Das? Das Teira. Two speakers said that. If I had been there, I would have gotten up. I would have said, you ignorant boor. Do you know the real history of how Teira Vadas got its name? If you don't know the history, you have no right to speak. And if you do know the history, and that's the way you're telling it, I'd smack your face, kick you in the groins, push you down a flight of steps, and tell you, don't show your face again in Flatbush, because you are a fadobenkeit of a human being, a total liar. Go be a gangster, import drugs to America, but don't teach Torah. Either you don't know, or you're telling the biggest lie altogether. And we'll see why. Truth of the matter is that I'm soon, believe me, they're going to print up new stationery, and instead of Torah Vamadar on my stationery, it's going to read Torah Vadat. And we'll come to it. Arien, I will explain myself a little later. Now, this is wonderful. I'm sitting here, a product of YU, sitting in YU, proud of YU. All right, fine. I plead guilty. I played a big role in YU's opening a presence in the state of Israel. To be honest, I was the Makaba Patish. I got this campus from Mr. Grisk. Vayiftach Hashem et pi aton. I may be a donkey, but God put the right words in my mouth. And read Washington. I recount the conversation word by word. I can't forget it. I relive it daily. As I approach this building, I see myself standing with Mr. Grisk in front of the building, and he's telling me his life story. Well, if I'm going to take this approach and be critical and evaluate and honestly criticize Teira Vadas, Das Teira, anyone who has any intellectual, the Rav guy in the 40s, the 50s, till he gave up the battle that he realized people are people and normalcy exists, he would have gone into orbit with anger, the intellectual dishonesty. It's overwhelming. Till he mellowed. No. In order to understand Torah Vadas, I have to understand it from within. I want you, Torah Vadas is a great achievement. We can have our critique. We can have our differences. But I want you to understand it from within. And I will not tolerate any criticism of Torah Vadas. I'm going to this point on, in a few minutes, I become a Torah Vedas person, and I remain a Torah Vedas person for the next foreseeable months to come. I want you to feel it, understand it. It's very important to take our point of view and weigh everything else with our understanding leaves us with a limited appreciation. Taira Vedas is Taira Vedas. They're 100 years old. They have succeeded. It's not why you. It's different. We have a critique, we have a critique. They have a critique about us. In Taira Vedas right now, lesbians and homos are not marching on the street and demanding recognition. All right? There's room for critique. I want to be positive. And I'll just end off this little introduction, and what I'm saying now will carry later when I deal with Satma. I will refute everything Satma says, and the very last shiur I will give, it'll take me 3 minutes, not longer, to refute everything. But until that point, I want to be a Satma. I want to understand. These are great achievements from within. And now I come back to Sukkos. Sukkos, you know, I know a little bit about the computer today, and suddenly I see a picture of a sukkah wall, and there's Reb Chaim Kanievsky, and next to him is a guy named Aaron Rakefet. So I thought they're making fun of me. If they're making fun of me, I can accept it. I enjoy it. Make fun of me. You can. Believe me, my skin is very thick. After what I went through in 61, 62, my first year in the rabbin, from that point on, I rejoice when someone makes fun of me. Adarabba the Adarabba. Then I found out, no, they're not making fun of me. It's the other way, that they're trying to shut the right-wing world, that they don't acknowledge there's people who are filled with Yirat Shemayim and Avat HaTorah and learning and knowledge beyond the right-wing world and have a different approach. And I never found out who did that photo montage. Then I had mazel. People went into a sukkah in Hanof, and lo and behold, this big sukkah on one side of the wall, these so-called Gedis, and the other side of the wall, there they took a picture, they sent it to me. There's Reb Aaron Lichtenstein, there's your humble servant, I think Normie Lamb's picture was there. I couldn't believe it. All right. So I would like to say, yes, I am giving these lectures. This has happened to me before. I've lectured on Rabbi, and people get hot-headed about it. And they say, how do you lecture about Rabbi Cutler, about this one and that one, with such emotion and feeling and understanding and respect and love? In Lakewood, they yet to have a lecture on Yeshiva University, although the summer before last, I have to be honest, they honored me in Lakewood, and they did hear a little bit about the good that comes out of Yeshiva University. All right. I look forward to the day that in Taira Vedas, there'll be endless lectures on the history of Yeshiva Reb Yitzchok Hanan, the mother of all yeshiva in the Western world, and it'll be given in a positive fashion, like I am going to speak about Taira Vedas. And now let us begin. Okay. Talk about Taira Vedas. I have to be honest that I had good friends in the Bronx. They came into MTA, and within a few months they ran to Taira Vedas. And we'll see, Taira Vedas always had a varmkeit, a warmth, that Reitz did not equal. They had a warmth beyond us. But how did it begin? And here you got to come back and understand. A juvenile might think, hey, Taira Vedas began against what is today YU. Nothing to do with it. Where were the yeshiva at the 1910, 1915? On the east side of New York, the first yeshiva opened beyond the east side was Yeshiva Salanter in Harlem. A yeshiva can only open where the Jews live. And Salanter, which is my alma mater, elementary school, actually opened 104, 105 years ago in Harlem. Then it moved to the Bronx, following where the Jews moved to. And it was first on Washington Avenue, which is a street my parents lived on, and I was born and raised there. My father grew up on Washington Avenue after Harlem. And then it moved to Webster Avenue, which I went to. Then it went through mergers. Today it's Tsar Academy. And if anyone here went to Tsar Academy, I have to tell you, please don't tell me you went to Solanta. Any resemblance between Tsar Academy and Yeshivat Rabbeinu Yisrael Solanta is purely, purely coincidental. But that's life. Now, the schools have to follow where the Jews live. The Jews were living on the East Side. You don't remember the East Side. Today you go down to the East Side, it's all Chinese. You barely see Jews there anymore, although it's being regentrified because of its location. It's who knows what's going to remain of New York after Corona. That's a different question, after de Blasio. But the East Side was very crowded, and people want to live a little bit better. It's a normal, natural desire. We're not all like the Chafetz Chaim. You all know the story of the Chafetz Chaim that Mr. Mendel, it wasn't Gevin Lechavno, it was Harry Fischel, was traveling through Europe. He went back to visit Mezrich, where he was born, to visit his parents' graves. And he visited the Chafetz Chaim in Raton. And he couldn't believe how the Chafetz Chaim lived with the simplest furniture possible. And he said, Rebbe, ich will euch kaufen, also sein Neifach, everything will be new. And what did it mean to Mr. Fischel? Imagine to spend a few thousand dollars, what he could have outfitted. To him, it was like me spending a penny. And Chafetz Chaim said to him, you're traveling now. Do you know? I don't want to repeat what you know, but Chafetz Chaim said, you're traveling. Tell me, do you have your furnishings with you, your apartment? Where do you live better, on the Upper East Side or when you're traveling to Raton? He said, no, in Raton I have nothing. He says, well, I'm also traveling. This is a temporary world. I'm building for the next world. I don't need anything beautiful here. I can be like you, Mr. Fischel, travel with very, very little. So Jews want to live better. And Williamsburg, across the bridge, Brooklyn always had lower housing, didn't have big buildings. There were more trees. It was better. And there's no question about it that by the early 1900s, Jews were living the East Side. Some were moving to Harlem. By 1910, Harlem was a tremendous Jewish area, and some were moving to Brooklyn. Now, how did Torah Vadas begin? And here we have testimony, first-hand testimony, from daughters of the original families. And I'm quoting to you from Jewish Observer, January 1978, beginning on page 16, an article by Sylvia Fuchs. I checked who she was, a wonderful teacher, beloved. She was a Dershowitz. And she tells the following story. Yeshiva Torah Vadat, how did it begin? My grandfather, Reb Zechariah Dershowitz, had moved to Williamsburg before 1910. He built the first shtibbel in the neighborhood. By 1916, my three older brothers were attending public school and receiving inadequate instruction from privately engaged rabbis. In other words, the grandfather moved, his son moved, the son's sons were in public school. There were no yeshiva. Nothing was there yet in Williamsburg. And how did you do? How did you study? They brought a rabbi to the house, an itinerant melamed. Believe me, you know how much has been written on Chadorim. It's a world unto itself. These were not the greatest pedagogues. These were not the greatest teachers. And these were the kids studying privately. My father chanced to meet an acquaintance, Mr. Benjamin Wilhelm, recognize the name? This is the great-grandfather of Rabbi Belsky, the famous Rosh Yeshiva. I happened to know the Welter. They had a store in Williamsburg. I knew them, actually. In extolling the virtues of living in Brooklyn, my father asked Mr. Wilhelm why he too doesn't move to Williamsburg. Quote, "I can't, because there are no yeshivas in Williamsburg." My father promptly countered, "So we'll make one." From this seemingly casual conversation between Mr. Louis Dershowitz and Mr. Benjamin Wellheim grew Yeshiva Torah Vedat. They in turn solicited the help of many. They were joined by Mr. Menashe Stein, who still plays a central role in Yeshiva and Metifta Torah Vedat. This is being recorded in 1978. Mr. Stein told me he went knocking on doors to solicit students. He was derisively greeted with taunts, "Was willen du? Machen Rabbanim?" And you have to understand, what do you want? You're going to train rabbis? Who needs rabbis in America? And you see this attitude, the Rav talks about Boston. When Maimonides was organized, they laughed at him. And even from Jews, you have to understand what the public school meant. You came to America, you are greenhorn. You didn't know how to speak English. My mother-in-law, Zichronet Tzadeket Levracha, she remembered all her life. She was born in America. She already had grandparents in America. She was born in America. But she went to public school, and one time she used the word calendar. What is calendar in Yiddish? What does it mean in English? Calendar. Calendar. The whole class laughed at her. It's like, till the day she died, she still felt the pain of that mistake in the holy public school where you worship the teacher. This was Americanization. What did we come here for? When the Kindles are bleiben greenhorns? Nicht reden English? Shouldn't speak English properly? And people, these are from people. They laugh. What, you gonna make rabbis here? You know, this is America. Rabbis will get from Europe. And these people went further and further and organized Torah Vedat. And the credit goes, basically, three names stick out above all. No question, Dershowitz and the Wilhelm family. There was also the Weberman family. That name, too, you might recognize, I hope for good reasons. They later become Malachim. There's a descendant of theirs today who's in federal penitentiary. That's a different story with a lot of bad publicity that I can't even mention in the presence of ladies. Okay, but it was a very prominent Taredic family, but in every family there may be a bad apple. That's the nature of the beast. Mashiach is not here yet, and we still haven't succeeded with chinuch, whether it's YU chinuch, or Torah Vedat chinuch, or Lakewood chinuch, or Satma chinuch, or in Israel, whether it's Shas, or Aguda, or Degel HaTera, we still come nowhere near 100% success rate. Now, what's fascinating is Chana Belsky, who's a granddaughter of the Wilhelm family, she comments on this article. It's in the same issue of Jewish Observer, January 1978. And she says, mother was anxious to move to the Williamsburg section of Brooklyn from the Lower East Side. In other words, Mrs. Wellheim, a lady, wants to live in a decent area. She doesn't want to be in an area where there are big buildings, there's not enough Lebensraum, living space, the oxygen is not healthy. Brooklyn is beautiful. But her grandfather said, I can't move unless I have a yeshiva. For Chana Belsky says, it's my older brother, Shea, Chaim Yehoshua, who was 4 years old at the time, and he said to his wife, fine, we'll move to Williamsburg, but if a year from now I don't have a yeshiva, we are moving back to the East Side. The East Side, you had Eitz Chaim, which is YU later, You had RJJ at this time. You had Yeshivas Yitzchok Chanan. You had choice. Okay. He immediately got to work, leaving my mother alone with their three babies many a long evening, trying to get people interested in helping. Mostly meeting not just indifference, but outright discouragement. The mere thought of not sending children to public school was described as an impossible, crazy idea, totally incompatible with living in the United States. My father approached Rabbanim to speak to their congregants. One of these Rabbanim opened his hand and told my father just as hair would never grow from the palm of his hand, so would his dream of a yeshiva never becoming a reality. And of course, this is Rabbanim already. How can you fight the tide? How can you overcome? You remember my lectures on Agudat HaRabbanim over the last 10 years. You understand this very well. Rabbanim already said, you're crazy. It will never succeed. And finally, with Mr. Dershowitz and pushing ahead, finally, the miracle happens and Teira V'Das opens up Sukkot of 1918, Ishru Chag. Right after Sukkot of 1918, Teira V'Das opens. Now, the person who played the biggest role in opening it, the rabbinic figure, is one of the legendary figures of the religious Zionist movement, and that is Rabbi Zev Gold. Rabbi Zev Gold, you all remember Machon Gold, right or wrong? Ariane, your mother had a choice. All that was available then was Michalav or Machon Gold. Your mother chose Machon Gold. I already gave my first lecture as a guest in Machon Gold in 1970. I started teaching there formally when the encyclopedia ended in 1971. Now, who was Rabbi Zev Gold? I have to tell you, he spoke in YU in my time. I saw the Rav had tremendous derech eretz for him. Rabbi Zev Gold, his years put him into context, 1889-1956. He was called by everyone Wolf, Zev Gold, but then hebraized his name. He was an Eloi, very bright individual, went to Mir Yeshiva. From Mir Yeshiva, he went to Teira V'Das in Lida. Now, this becomes, let me just say a few words about Lida. It's one of the interesting chapters in the history of Torah in modern times. The founder of Lida was Rav Reines, Rabbi Yitzchak Yaakov Reines. I yet knew his son. Rabbi Reines was a Gaon, an Eloi, a graduate of Volozhin. Rabbi Reines was caught up with Zionism. Bilu, Beit Yaakov, Lechul V'Nelcha, Chibat Zion, Chovevei Zion. He was caught up with all the problems in Russia, the Jew coming out of the Pale of Settlement, the anti-Semitism. And he reached a conclusion, very similar to the conclusion that many members of the Soloveitchik family were to reach decades later, that in the modern world, a young man has to be educated not just in Torah, but in general knowledge as well. We have to have the ability to speak the language of the land. We have to know mathematics. We have to know what is called in Israel today the core curriculum. All right. He organized the first yeshiva high school that we have in modern times. There may have been schools like this in the Golden Age in Spain, Lida, and he organized it in Europe. And he gave it the title, it was called Teira V'Das, Torah v'da'at, meaning Torah and knowledge. And this was the name of Lida. Rabbi Zev Wolf, who had emigrated to America at an early age, became a very bright fellow, excellent speaker, orator in Yiddish, mastered English, could speak a very good English as well, later Hebrew, rabbi in a number of cities in America. He was Rav of one of the big shuls in Williamsburg, and Dershowitz and Welheim and Weberman went to him, and he bought the idea, we're organizing a yeshiva katana. For the first time outside of the East Side, in Brooklyn, in Williamsburg, and we're going to call it, like Lida, Yeshiva Torah V'Das. It will be modern, it will be American, it will have general knowledge. And the parents don't have to be ashamed and don't have to be upset. They can send their children here, and the children will succeed, both in the world of Torah and in the world, the Western world, in which they find themselves. Eli, what Pasha did we read this past Shabbat? Vayechi. Oh, I want to ask you a simple question. Yosef HaTzadik is told his father is ill. He runs with his two sons to visit his father, to visit Yaakov Avinu. And Yaakov Avinu doesn't recognize his sons. Mi'ena lecha. Oh my gosh, Maishala. You know what it means to have grandchildren? You don't have to. Of course you recognize them. Yaakov Avinu didn't recognize his sons. Binyamin, did you ever open a Malbin?
Yes.
No? What does he say? What does he say?
I
can't hear. I can't hear.
I don't know what he
said
in this passage.
Oh, no. Say this. But he reminded me of, there was a story with Chaim Soloveitchik. He was a tyrant as a teacher, and in Hebrew U, he used to give a special shiur, and suddenly he says, what did the Ramban say? And the guy, I don't know. And he, get out of here. What did the Ramban say? Nothing. He didn't comment on that pasuk. But here the Malbim does comment, and I'll develop it for you just very slightly and lightly. Yes. Ephraim and Manasseh worked in Pharaoh's court. They wore Egyptian clothes. Whenever they came to visit Yaakov Avinu, they changed their clothes. They put on their Jewish clothes, their bekesher, their shtreimel, their gadol. Today they were told, quick, come, your grandfather is ill. They had no time to change. He didn't recognize them. Mi'ela, they look like Egyptians. What will be... And Yosef HaTzadik tells his father, Dad, you have nothing to worry about. These are the children that God blessed me with in this land. They have to live here. They have to make a living. They have to succeed. They have to understand the culture, the environment. Oh, Noach, Yaakov Avinu then blesses them. V'yukarvehem shmi v'shem avotai v'ram b'yitzav. They should succeed in retaining the tradition and being loyal sons of Avraham and Yitzchak. But I acknowledge you're right. The Yitkularov bekerav ha'aretz. They have to be successful in Egypt, in this land, in this culture. That's Torah V'Das. And this will explain something else to you. Yomo, one day you'll have to bless your grandchildren on Friday night. Yisimcha bini, Kefrayim uchumenasha. What's the matter with you? There's a woman, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Leah, and you leave out Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Ephraim uchumenasha? Absolutely. Because we never know where the children will be. We say to them, even if your fate is to wind up in alien culture, to live like Ephraim Umanasha, we want you to succeed in retaining your commitment, your Mesorah, your Judaism, like they did. The greatest bracha we can give you, Yisimcha Elokim, Kefrayim, Uchumanasha. Gentlemen, that's how Torah Vadas got its name. That was the ideal, that's what it's based upon. Now I will explain to you, Ariane, why I have to change my stationery and break with the tide. Why you never had a slogan. But in 1945, they got university status. A university has to have a slogan. Harvard, Yale, right? You know, each one has. One has in Hebrew, actually. Latin. Why you needed a slogan? The only slogan why you should have is Torah V'Das. That's why you. But they had a real problem. By 1945, if you would have had a slogan, Torah V'Das, everyone would be contributing millions of dollars to yeshiva, Torah V'Das. There was an MTV, Mislifta Torah V'Das. They were on the map. They were thriving. They existed. Everyone knew them as Torah V'Das. Hey, wait a minute. Fundraising? Rabbi Belkin's job? Dr. Belkin's job? What destroyed Rabbi Revel? What could have put the Rav under? Fundraising. Oh boy, you can't use a slogan, Torah V'Das. So then they came up with Torah Umada. Until today, no one, but no one, can properly define Torah Umada. No, no one. Modern Hebrew, Mada, science. Why you with science? Why is a lot more? Psychology, sociology, English literature, science, mathematics, fine. Some people try to say, well, Sefer HaMada of the Rambam. Big deal, so Sefer HaMada. Philosophy, fabulous philosophy, basic philosophy of Yiddishkeit, Hilchot Tshuva, Hilchot, I don't have to tell you, Hilchot Talmud Torah, Yesodei HaTorah, but why you? Just Sefer HaMada? It's a lot more than Sefer HaMada. No, no, in Israel, Chach Wissenschaft des Judentum. Ariane, when you studied in Germany 250 years ago, so you were attracted to Wissenschaft des Judentum. Psunz, did you hear lectures about this? I asked your parents to tell you the lectures I gave on it when they were my students. Wissenschaft, Leopold Psunz, knew over the years, Chochmat Yisrael. Some people, Chochmat Yisrael, that's what we're talking about. Rav Kefir and the Kolo gave lectures maybe 40, 50 years ago. Kolo first began, but I did give lectures on Chochmat Yisrael, what it's all. Bernard Rebel Graduate School. Wissenschaft, Chochmat Yisrael. Some people use the term in Israel, Mada HaYahadot. Mada HaYahadot. All right. But why use a lot more than Chochmat Yisrael and science and whatever? Torah Umada, whatever it means, it does not capture what YU is. And Binyamin, from this point on, when you speak about YU, don't give me a slogan. Torah Umada. Give me a different aphorism. Torah. Torah V'Dat. Brooklyn, they can say Torah V'Das, and in YU will say Torah V'Dat. But that's how MTV began. There's actually no one who believed this today. But these are the facts. Rabbi Zev Gold later becomes very important in the Jewish agency. He becomes an international figure. He heads up the Torah Culture Department of the World Zionist Organization. And right after his death, they organize a school in his memory in Yerushalayim, Machon Gold, the school that doesn't exist anymore when the Reforming Conservative took over the World Zionist Organization, but a school that became the prototype for tens and tens of women's seminaries al Admat HaKodesh. Now, historically, I want to make one correction. There's a Wikipedia article on Rabbi Zev Gold, and it talks about Machon Gold. And it says that Machon Gold began as a girls' seminary. And I shudder to think I may be one of the few people still alive who can tell the truth. If anyone knows how to correct something in Wikipedia, please make the following correction. And here's the real story. Following the establishment of the State of Israel, the first few years, no one could breathe yet. We were caught up in Milchemet HaShichrur, we were caught up in the Mabarak, you all know the story. We were caught up, there was no food here, nothing could be done. By the mid-50s, people were starting to breathe here. And there was a big problem that you didn't have teachers who could teach Zionism, Judaism, Hebrew around the world, particularly Europe and South America, France. America, Baruch Hashem, was on the map already. But France, the rest of Europe, Holland, Belgium, Brazil, Argentina, Uruguay. So the World Zionist Organization came up with the idea that we have to organize schools that will prepare teachers for the diaspora. And in 1958, 2 years after Zev Gold died, they opened up two different schools, keeping with the Israeli tradition, one Mamlachti Dati, as if to speak, and one Mamlachti. One religious, one irreligious. The irreligious school was called the Chaim Greenberg, Machon Chaim Greenberg. The religious school was called Machon Zev Gold, in memory of Zev Gold. Both schools were co-ed. Machon Gold was co-ed, Chaim Greenberg was co-ed. I still have met men who will tell you they studied at Machon Gold. People laugh at them, you hung out in Machon Gold, doesn't mean you studied. No, they studied in Machon Gold. But here's what happened, and again, it's a reflection of the times. In the 1950s, the general culture was much more conservative and traditional. You didn't have to be Jewish to understand that premarital relations was a disgrace. It interfered with the beauty of marriage. You didn't have to be Jewish to have these feelings. I don't have to tell you the sexual revolution, what happened in the 1960s. Woodstock, it reached the point, and there was a bad incident in Machon Gold, in the dormitory. Don't have to elaborate, you will understand. And by 1968-69, the religious element realized they can't go on with boys and girls under one roof in one dormitory. The irreligious element went along. I don't have to tell you what goes on today in North Tel Aviv, what goes on today with the youth, what goes on today when these high school kids, I don't want to elaborate, I know too much, unfortunately. God have mercy, if a kid graduates a secular high school and he's still a virgin, believe me, it's a miracle. But in the religious world, we have principles. We don't want to desecrate marriage. We, as is, we have enough problems with divorce. Could you imagine if we lived like everyone else, what percentage we would have with divorce? Gutsalapitin. So it was decided to split and have Machon Gold for women and Machon Gold for men. And Ellie, you now got a new piece of history. When your great uncle came to Israel, he was going to Machon Gold for men. That's how it began. But very shortly it became obvious it needed its new identity, a different identity. So the name that Machon Gold gave it was Jerusalem College for Men. Very important after the Six-Day War to mention Jerusalem. It attracted, it was a lodestar. And didn't catch on. What did catch on was the founding dean, the man who called me, reached out to me, sent me, not called me, I had no phone, but sent me a telegram and asked me to join in Jewish history, the course that Michael took. Michael, I checked with him. He had the date when I gave the first lecture. That's how organized he was, November 69. And Rabbi Horowitz was a product of what you call Skokie today, Hebrew Theological College, Beit Medrash LaTorah in Hebrew. He started calling it Jerusalem Torah College, Beit Medrash LaTorah, BMT. It caught on. The name caught on. In other words, no one remembers already Machon Gold for men. No one remembers Jerusalem Torah College, but BMT. And this was all back, go back 58, a few years, in memory of Rabbi Zeb Gold, so that the founding rabbi and the man who named Terev Hadas becomes a lion in the history of religious Zionism. Okay, it's point number one of today's lecture. Now, let's go a step further. The sources that we can call upon, and I'm going to mention two books that I'll cite time and again. The most important book written, and it breaks my heart that we have nothing similar in YU, and Torah Vadas can be very proud. At their 100th anniversary, they published a volume entitled Yeshiva and Mesifta Torah Vadas, America's Yeshiva, 1919 to 2019. It is a massive volume. I can barely lift it. It's half the size of this table, a third of this table, without exaggeration. Hundreds and hundreds of pages. Very colorful. It's not a scientific volume, but it has endless memoir literature about the periods, about the people, about the Rosh Yeshiva, about the Board of Trustees, and about certain innovations, what went on in Machon, what went on in Terev Hadas. That is one volume. The other volume is an Art Scroll volume. Again, Rabbi Eisenstein met me after class yesterday, and it seems Art Scroll has come out with a volume on Rabbi, if I pronounce it right, Kulevich. He was the Rosh Yeshivim Terev Hadas, and Rabbi Eisenstein's father, Rabbi Kolovsky, I think it's his name, he was a Mira, it might have even been a Shanghai survivor. I'd like to see the volume. And Rabbi Eisenstein's father told him, look at this volume that just came out and compare it to Rabbi Rakepitz's publications. What a difference! And he wasn't praising the Art Scroll volume. We'll leave it at that. So it is an Art Scroll volume, and there are problems in it, but it is an attempt to portray almost honestly. You'll understand, as I cite from it, where their problems are. The man who more than anyone else in the history of Torah Vadas put it on the map, developed it, colored its atmosphere, and that, of course, is Mr. Shraga Feivel Mendelovich. And the volume is called Reb Shraga Feivel, The Life and Times of Rabbi Shraga Feivel Mendelovich, the Architect of Torah in America. And again here, you right away have a problem with the title, The Architect of Torah in America, was Rabbi Dov Revel. But one of the architects, the second architect. But all right, we have to live with this. This is Art Scroll, and it's thwarting. It hurts me intellectually. It's sinful, but this is the reality. A lot, we'll talk about this in class on Sunday Shir. To get into Sunday Shir, it's $36,000 linked to the shekel this Sunday. You don't get in chinam, what I'm going to show you. Ariane, a doctor, Muggin the Megan Muggin, asking the Muggin, Megan Muggin Have. If a doctor heals for nothing, he's worth nothing. You got to appreciate the Rebbe is giving us something. Of course, I don't collect, but it does go on the IOU list. And I'll come back to this. But this volume, it's by Yonatan Rosenblum. Yonatan Rosenblum has written a number of volumes for Art Scroll. He's a historically trained person. He's a Baal Tshuva, and he writes very well. I can't fault him because he's a Baal Tshuva, and this is the way he's taught to think at times. So I do have critiques, but he's given us many wonderful gifts. I believe on Mike Tress, Rabbi Moshe Scherer, etc. And this volume, extremely important, on the life of Mr. Shraga Feivel Mendelovich. Now, let's put him into context. His years, 1886, 1948. He was born in the Austro-Hungarian Empire. He came from a Hasidic family. By the 1900s, he was exposed already to a lot more than Hasidus. You had Hungarian Orthodoxy, closer to Germany, was a much more Western integrated Orthodoxy. He was exposed to German Orthodoxy. He was exposed to the school of the Chatam Sofer. He was exposed to the school of Rav Shimshon Rafael Hirsch. He had a very broad education. It wasn't the Litvashi Yeshiva Bacha whose, you know, main thrust was Shas and Paiskim and Reb Chaim and Reb Shimon Shkup, etc. I don't know if he was ever exposed on that basic level. Gemara he knew, but in a Hungarian fashion, which was very different than the Litvashi felt. But a much broader education, Jewish philosophy. He was exposed to Rav Hirsch, greatly admired Rav Hirsch, exposed to the Kuzari, exposed to Rav Avram Yitzchak Kohen Cook. There was a broadness to him way beyond his background, Hasidish, Hungarian, etc. Now, he had a desire, and this is a burning desire a young man should have. I've often told you, and I'm being very honest with you, when I was younger than you, 23, going into the rabbinate, my desire was to change the whole world, and every Jew should be a Shema Shabbos. Today, I don't have such desires. My desires are to teach Torah LaHagdil, Torah LaHadira, those who reach out to me, to give them as much as I can, Torah Tashem Tamima. But a young man has to have a desire to change the world. I need not tell you, it's said in the name of many gedolim, when I was young I wanted to change the world. Today I'm happy just to change myself to be from. Okay, those are a healthy development in life, a healthy involvement. He had this desire to change the world. 1913, he leaves his wife and children behind, and this was part of the course. He comes to America, lands in Philadelphia. He's going to help change America like Rav Hirsch changed Germany. He finds a teaching job in Scranton, Pennsylvania. Now, Scranton, Pennsylvania is a story unto itself. It always had a Frum community. It's one of these communities where they didn't totally assimilate and intermarry. They always had, there were families there, like, take one example, the Fink family. I taught many members of the family. Generation after generation remained Frum. Many of them live in Israel today. He did very well in Scranton. It was a Talmud Torah. At that time, no one dreamt of ever having a yeshiva outside of the Lower East Side, outside of Harlem, outside of Williamsburg. It was a Talmud Torah, and he was very much Liach. People loved him as a teacher. In 1920, it took 7 years, he was able to bring his family to America, saving up the money after World War I, able to bring them. These were Maisim B'chol Yom, where the father went way in advance of the rest of the family, but this took 7 years. It's a little bit out of the ordinary. 7 full years until he could bring the family to the United States. Well, Torah V'Das begins, 1918. They're on the map. They have students. They're succeeding. My dear students, what makes a school a school? You can organize schools from today to tomorrow. You have to have good teachers, a good principal. You have to have vision. You have to attract students. No one is born in Torah V'Das. No one is born in Gris Kollel. Gris Kollel has been on the map since 1978 with a formal program. It really began in 76. Right now there's a student looking at me from Chicago who was part of the original little group that YU sent over, but it was not yet a formal program. And what keeps Gris on the map? A good faculty. If we didn't have a good faculty, no one would be here. What keeps Torah Shragar on the map? You have no idea how Torah Shragar began. You have no idea how Torah Shragar began. This was begun by Rabbi Riskin. Do you know the history or not? Rabbi Riskin began a foreign students program. There were real problems because by the time Rabbi Riskin began the program, there were many rebbeim in New York, including in Yeshivat Flatbush, who didn't want to send children to study with him. They felt he's too left. So the school did not take off. And you have a school, and you have a teacher who's teaching women, who's unbelievably successful. Everyone loves him. And that, of course, is Rabbi David. And I was amazed. Rabbi David took the risk, came in, took over the school. There was no one here. It was laughable. A handful of students in where you were teaching MMY, you were a hero. You were a gibor. No, he took the risk. The rest is history. Now, what makes Torah Shragar so successful? It's Rabbi David and a fabulous teaching staff. Many of them are my own students. But this is a school. Torah V'Das was looking around, where can we find a machanech who can make this school special? And they brought Mr. Now, he had smicha. He had smicha, but he insisted he be called Mr. Mendelovich. He never allowed anyone to call him rabbi. You can probably explain this, that he tried, and we'll talk about this next, a little bit today, but next week, he probably wanted to bring many great rabbanim to teach in Torah V'Das. By now, Yeshivas Reb Tzichol Chanan was on the map, and it had great teachers. We're talking 1923. They already brought the Meitzer to America. Well, someone like Mr. Mendelovich is not going to call himself a rabbi in the presence of someone like the Meshitta. So he was very happy, Mr., the title Mr. He came to New York. He becomes the principal. He is teaching. and slowly but surely, Teira Vadas and Mr. Mendelovich are one and the same. Everything, all the vision, all the innovation, it's through him. Now let me just say something else about this early period in New York. 1923, when he gets to New York, he's overwhelmed. There are now millions of Jews, East European. I don't have to tell you, my own family, some of you relate to these families. How many remained religious? How many were assimilating? What was happening in America? What was happening in the greater New York area? What was happening with the conservative temples all over conquering the world? So he teamed up with a very famous person who was a Tzaddik Yesod Olam, Yesala Rosenblatt, the famous Chazan. You should know was a Tzaddik Yesod Olam. At this time, there were many Chazanim. You can read memoir literature. I spoke about it in class. There was one Chazan who came to Borough Park to sing, to lead the service, and he drives up on Shabbos a few blocks from the shul. He was well off, and there was a riot on the streets. They would not let him daven. There were from people in the shul, guys, Machalo Savin. This was a famous Chazan. It's in the memoir literature. I've quoted in the past. I'll get to it again in the future. And they used to say, one Chazan, when he fell Koyrim on Yom Kippur, they swore that he had a sandwich in his talus. And while he fell on the floor, Koyrim, in the middle of davening, they took him in 3 minutes, 4 minutes, they say he ate half a sandwich at that time. And Rabbi Yosela Rosenblatt was a Tzaddik Yesod Olam. I'm privileged to have taught members of his family. And he teamed up with Mr. Mendelovich. They started publishing a English and Yiddish pamphlet called Das Yiddische Licht, The Jewish Light. And they already recognized that Yiddish was not good enough. You have to have some of it in English. There's a new generation. And for a number of years later, it became a daily, and they went bankrupt. And you have to understand, by 1927, they had a discontinued publication. Yosela Rosenblatt went on a worldwide tour to make money to pay back what the newspaper owed before it stopped publication. I mean, this is to his eternal credit. And they had a vision: conquer, support, give them succor, educate, teach, publish. But America was America. It did not work out. Now, what did he do in Teira Vadas? 1926, and I'm just going to be very brief now because this material will go into the various periods in detail. But just to give you a framework to understand who he was, what he did, 1926, he organized the high school. Now here you have to understand, organizing a high school was a heroic achievement. This is already going beyond elementary school. When you organize a high school, these are kids who are dreaming about college already. I need not tell you, you can criticize Ramaza Maimonides from here to tomorrow. They would boast about their kids that got into Harvard, Yale, Princeton, Ivy League colleges. And I grew up with this, I saw with my own eyes. Ribbono Shel Olam, this was high school kids already. You've got to prep them so they succeed, all right? I don't know, I would have different feelings. Show me a kid in high school who's already bucking in shas and knows how to learn, but all right, he has to go to high school, he has to go. I also was not a bad high school student. If I recall correctly, I was valedictorian of my class. I think I'm, but all right, but this is the reality. This is the reality. And he organized the high school. This is following the example of Talmudical Academy. See, it's Talmudical Academy begins January 1916. This is 10 years later. And what the parents are telling him We can't just have the kids 8 years of elementary school, then out in the world. Look what Yeshivas V'Shul Chanan has. Kinat Sofrim Tarbe Chachma. On the east side you have what later becomes MTA. At that time it's Talmudical Academy because there's no Brooklyn branch, so you don't have to call it MTA. We won a high school in our backyard in Williamsburg. And this was a tremendous move, the second yeshiva high school in the United States. Teira Vadas, living up to its reputation. Rabbi Reines, leader, Teira Vadas, Torah and general knowledge. That was 1926. More than that, at YU, Rabbi Revel already is talking in terms of organizing a college. Why does he want to organize the college? As you recall my lectures, because too many kids are running away to secular colleges, general colleges. Every kid wants to go to college. Let him be able to have a dual curriculum. We want him to be a Lamdan. We want him to be a Talmud Chacham. It's not just enough to study elementary and to study high school. Go on and remain here when you're mature, when you're 17 and 18 and 19 and 20. In 1926, in addition to organizing the high school, the Mesifta opens up a Beit Medrash. Now listen to me very, very carefully, because this is a point that comes up again after World War II. They don't organize a college. To organize a college, it's a giant step forward, and you have to allow liberal arts and science. You cannot censor your teachers. It's not a Catholic college. Catholic colleges did have censorship then, they don't have today. But it was too daunting. The responsibility of raising money is overwhelming. What you need for a college, what a faculty with courses. So the attitude was, we will organize the Beis Medrash and the students can take advantage of the local colleges. And perhaps the percentage was 99% of the students, maybe 100%. You went to Teira Vadas and you had a college program. Generally speaking, evening classes, summer classes. If you were industrious, you could finish college in 4 years, just like any normal college program. If you didn't want to tax yourself, so you did college in 5 years. An extra year, night courses, summer courses, and this solved the problem of college, of university. These students didn't have to run away from the yeshiva. You had the high school, you had the metifta. You never had a college under one roof like Yeshiva University. But you could arrange a program essentially with Brooklyn College, someone at the City College, Baruch, it depends what they wanted to study. It was a train ride away, a subway ride away. Brooklyn is not the end of the world. There was the connection to Manhattan. So you could arrange a program in accordance with your interest and ambitions. Now, if you want to know how open the atmosphere was at Teira Vadas, and I just want to make one other point afterwards and then end off. I'm watching the clock. If you want to know how open the atmosphere was at that time, don't confuse Teira Vadas of the 1920s with Teira Vadas of the 2020s. About 100 years ago, what happened in America, youth is given to extremism. That's part of the problems of youth. At times they've brought children to me to speak to, youngsters, and I just couldn't believe how warped their minds are, but that's youth. You have to know how to channel it properly. So you developed in America the Malachim. Again, I can't repeat my lectures. Some of you may recall I spent a lot of time a number of years ago on the Malachim. Malachim began on Washington Avenue in the Bronx, believe it or not. Rabbi Levine, about four blocks away from where my father grew up, and about 11 blocks away from where I grew up. I mentioned his son the other day, what was it, last week, I believe, in class with Rabbi Grzewski. And the Malachim, Rabbi Levine Sr., not his son, totally denigrated any part of the Western world, college, university. Every student should go with it, sits it out in the beard and pay us. And like I'm sitting in this room, and once again I tell everyone watching across the world, I'm the only one sitting in the room outside of one young lady who's the daughter of my students, a student herself and her grandfather, my classmate. She does not have a beard on her face, and I don't have a beard in my face. Outside of that, I am overwhelmed by the beautiful beards I see staring at me. Okay? Do you know that they started propaganda in Torah Adas that if you go to college, you're a sheyitz, you're an oisvaf, you're a bum? These students who became malachim were thrown out of Torah Adas for polluting the atmosphere. Maisha, can you believe it? Put your mark on it. And you know where you'll find? There was a tshuva, Rabbi Lamb's uncle, Emet Halacha, Rabbi Yeshua Boimuk, his uncle, wrote a whole tshuva allowing Torah Vadas to throw out students. I quoted it in class. I gave all the makarot. He quotes Gemaras where a Rebbe gets mad at a student. They kick them out. Mr. Mendelovich, could you imagine? But this is a fact. But this was Torah Vadas of 100 years ago. That was the atmosphere. That's how it began. Finally, he had one more tremendous innovation beginning in 31, and he was the first one. You now have an elementary yeshiva, you have a high school, you have a Beis Medrash program. The high school is called the Metifta Torah Vadas, the Beis Medrash program, and a summer camp. Camp Metifta, Torah Vadas. They were the first ones. Chaim Levin follows afterwards. YU follows afterwards. Morasha, that's where Yoma wound up by some miracle and started to become a person reclaiming the tradition with his forebears, his ancestors. He was the first one. And he recognized the truism. I went to B'nai Akiva, to Moshava. It changed my life. Why? What's so great about a summer camp? Because these kids, all year, where are they? They're in New York, secular world, general world, the Big Apple. They see Yiddishkeit, but a very fragmented Yiddishkeit. Take them away to a summer camp. Everyone is frum. Everyone observes Shabbos. Ah, everyone davens. Tisha B'Av in Morasha became a world production. Churban Habayit. Ribbono Shel Olam. He was the first one. Camp Metifta, give Torah Vadas the golden medal. But then later, I remember Chaim Berlin's camp, Camp Morris, named after the donor. And I was in Morasha, and Moshava, I was in Moshava recently. It's not the same as 53, 52, but wow. Young people, this is how Torah was built in America, stone by stone. And I'm trying my best to be a Torah Vadas person. I apologize at times, I can't help myself. The critique sneaks out. But this is an honest presentation. Torah Vadas, leader, don't everyone, if I say to you, Meshulah, where do you go? Why you? What is the motto? Torah Mada. Don't you dare say that. Torah Mada, meaningless. Describe Mada to me. Take your 5 years to write a treatise on the various aspects of Mada. Charlie went to Harvard. All right, he knows Mada from Harvard. Fine. But you went to YU, a lot more than science, a lot more than a degree in physics or chemistry or biology. Mada, Mada, Sefer HaMada. All right, so you're a great philosopher. Join the Rav, the latest issue of Tradition. How many of you have seen it? I'm reading it, I'm enjoying it. Some of the writers are my students about how do you teach young high school kids in addition to Gemara, Jewish philosophy, Hashkafa, how do you put it all? All right, Torah Mada, Sefer Mada, Mada Hayadot, Chachmat Yisrael. All right, Rakefet went to Bernard Rebel Graduate School. I have 3 degrees from there. I don't deny it. 2 masters and a doctorate. But that's limited too. Torah Vadas says it all. And we have to reclaim the title. We are the continuation of Rabbi Reines' dream in Lida. I knew his son. I relive it. My brother once won an award for his work in Mizrahi, and it was awarded to him by Rabbi Reines' son, Rabbi Reines Jr., in the United States. We have. I'm sure my brother has a picture. I still remember. I may have a picture too. That's Torah Vadas. My dear students, what have we done today? I introduced the major topic, Torah Vadas, Torah Mesorah, Mr. Mendelovich. I critiqued the heck out of Torah Vadas. Bill Gvirtz, I don't want you to send me a letter. Dear Rebbe, you have painted Torah Vadas in too positive a color. I agree with all your critique, and I suffer even more than you. Could you imagine getting up in public, two Rebbeim speak, Torah Vadas, Torah Das Torah, Ribbono Shel Olam, you tell me what Das Torah is. Okay, believe me, I know what Das Torah is about, the pro, the con, etc. But, yes, Bill, I want to portray Torah Vadas. They did achieve. You went to high school there. Julie Berman went to high school there. Normie Lamb went to high school there. Albert Brandspiegel went to high school there. Oh, wow. An endless list of high school people who changed the world in many respects. We'll stop next week's shiur with some of these people and who they were, and then come back to Torah Vadas, the atmosphere. All right, Sunday, as I said, $36,000 linked to the shekel to come into class. World War III, Rabbis Schachter versus Schachter. Oh boy, no wonder the Rebbe earns a living. It's worth everything just to see your faces. Are there any questions in front of me? Yes, Benjamin.
I just wanted to clarify, so do they encourage people going to college?
Oh,
or they're against it?
No, no. Forget the word against and first negating, forget the word encouragement. Do you breathe air?
Yes.
That's college. It was natural. Of course you went to college in America. You had to make a living. Whoever heard of being a batlan? It didn't exist at that time. You understand?
The Malachim story? Oh,
the Malachim started like, well, we came again in college. Medaf no red in Yiddish, only speak Yiddish. We came again on a board, a neuswaff, a trumpenik. You understand?
No.
Please, go back in time with me and master Yiddish. It's no big deal. It'll help you all your life when you have to work for the Mossad in communist Russia. Believe me, the Yiddish saved my life. They were thrown out of Torah Vadas because they were anti-college.
Oh, they were anti-college.
Yes, 100%. Go back and hear my lectures. Let Yomo find it for you on yutorah.org. I wish someone would sponsor a student sitting down for 7 years and doing an outline. Jack came up with a whole program that works, and then you can search and you can come up with the lecture. But you got it now, Benjamin? I owe you. I can't take for granted. I have to help. Yomo, what's your problem?
I don't have a problem. I wanted to ask a question.
Go ahead.
What does Rebbe mean when the Shabbos one saying in in Mayim saying Atacha Natana Lemada Taratecha.
There, Lemada Taratecha means to study Torah, period. You follow? There's no question. It means Mada, the knowledge of Torah, the general knowledge of Torah. You can say it includes Shas, Paiskim, Kabbalah, but when you use the word Torah Mada, it's very misleading, because really what you mean is Torah Vedas. Rabbi Reines had the, what's the word? He was the first one. He had the monopoly. Then Rabbi Gold copied it in Brooklyn. And by 45, when YU wanted, and what I'm saying is absolute facts, when YU wanted a slogan, a motto, an aphorism, call it what you wish, Torah Mada. They couldn't use Torah Vedas, it would have undermined their fundraising. Who are you fundraising for? You should or Masif Tata Vedas, Mas Meitmanda, what do you mean here? Ay, Binyamin, what can I do? I'm a third generation American, but the greatest gift, my Rebbe, in my seventh grade, I had the Shanghai crowd, Rabbi Ankelovich. In eighth grade, I had Rabbi Fishman. They didn't speak a word of English. In Yichab Nishkaret, Avot in Yiddish, I didn't speak a word of Yiddish. It was swim or sink, you understand? Later, I understand this was Minas Shemayim. Why? Number one, it gave me the ability to understand the Rav inside out. I never had a problem. Number two, when my wife and I worked for the Mossad in communist Russia, what language do you speak? So in the two big cities, in Moscow and Leningrad, which is Petersburg today, Petersburg, in those two cities, I spoke either English or Hebrew as they told me to speak. And if need be, someone translated from English to Russian or Hebrew to Russian. But in the small cities, Vilna, Minsk, Riga, I could speak, anyone who was 40 or older, his native language was Yiddish. Follow? In Riga, I still felt, anyone here a Chabadnik, anyone understand Chabad, I still felt the presence of the Sixth Rebbe, the elderly people, it was like the Rebbe was still alive for them. You follow? You could still feel the presence of the Sixth Rebbe. Okay, Mori, Atkan, until we meet again in health and happiness, Das Vedanya. Mori, open it up so the world can ask if
the recording has stopped.
Okay. Are there any questions from all the wonderful people listening? Mark, I mentioned Rabbi Bronstein.
Really,
One second. Mark Watson. I mentioned Rabbi Bronstein, your Rebbe. I didn't even know you were listening, so I mentioned him. I'm very proud now. Yes. Who wants to ask?
I wanted to say you mentioned the centennial volume that Torah Vedas printed and published. It's a very impressive, magnificent volume recording the history of the institution. And I just wanted to say, it's a rather telling, and I think for our Kiva, it's a sad commentary, that in the small paragraph at the very end of the volume, which mentions Rabbi Yitzhak Lichtenstein and his association with the yeshiva as the new Rosh Yeshiva, there's hardly a mention that Rabbi Yitzhak is the scion of the
Jewish lineage. The Rav's...
It's a very disturbing paragraph.
Jay, that isn't the only problem. I go through that problem page by page. No mention of Yeshivtzkel, no mention of the Meitzit, and no mention of how this inspired them to bring Rabbi Hyman. I will talk about it in class. That's their mentality. Believe me, I'm not part of that world because I consider this a disgrace to Torah. But I want to understand from within. That's exactly. Now, I'll tell you something. I mentioned this before. They don't mention this. Nothing. The first site of anyone from YU, I think it's on page 265, it's a picture of the graduates of Torah Vedas who got involved benefish, saving people from doing abortions. Look whose picture is there. I don't want to mention the name. One of the YU graduates who disgraced YU, who was in the New York Times. He's related to me by marriage today. He wasn't invited to his own grandchild's wedding. That's the first picture. Anyway, Oh, that's a YU graduate. I said, that's a punishment to them that they didn't do an honest job. You can talk about Torah V'dasim, praise Torah V'dasim, show the difference between them and YU. Beautiful, but be intellectually honest. You were not born in a vacuum. But that's why I gave my introduction, because, Jay, I didn't want everyone to criticize me. Hey, Rakefet, you're seeing it too bright and too beautiful. I'm aware. But nevertheless, I wish Yeshiva University could put out a vadum like they put out. YU is soon going to be, make the cheshbon, 1886. How many years old YU? We're heading towards 150 years. Kainayin Hara, put out a volume. More than that, I plead with you, put out a volume on Rabbi Belkin. Rabbi Klapman did 1885 to 1915. Ani Rothkopf did 1915 to 1940. Put out a volume, a thesis, a PhD. Bernard Rebel, I've been pleading for years. Kol Korei Bamidbar. They laugh at me. They don't give a hoot. They don't have a feeling for Torah history. If you don't have a past, you don't have a future. So that's Halavai. Then we can worry about Rabbi Lamb and take it further. But okay, that's life. I don't know what's going on in New York. I'm here. They're there. I've been here 52 years, so I don't even want to try to understand why we hit this dead end with Rabbi Belkin. It's worse than that. You heard what I said the other day, what I was told, and Hashem Yirachem. Okay, any other questions?
Rabbi?
Yeah.
Rabbi?
Go ahead.
A couple of small things. What you're saying about Madra, I remember my Rebbe, Reb Schwartz, used to point that Madra is the Targum of Dat. It's the Aramaic. It's the same Shoresh, really.
Right.
So Torah Madra, Torah Vedat. I don't know if they were thinking when they chose it. I don't know if they were thinking it. Didn't the Seder that Rabbi Revel, in one of his, mentioned Torah Vedat? The Torah Madra. He mentioned Torah Madra.
I can't answer.
I think at one point, he doesn't, that's a phrase. He's talking about a recommendation. He says, this person is great in both Torah and Madra. I think they claim that that's where they got
If Rabbi Revel mentioned it, it's because of Chochmat Yisrael. Madah HaYahadut. So Rabbi Rebel... Rabbi Rebel...
It was a logo.
Yeah.
It was a pasuk, you know, the pasuk about V'haya Emunat Yitecha.
Right.
The Dad. So they said that the Dad, you know, they had to change it maybe, but... just one other thing.
YU should be Teira Vedas, because it's mamish the incarnation of Rabbi Reines' thinking. But I understand they couldn't do that for obvious reasons. People would say, oh, you want $1 million? Here, Teira Vedas. Nem the million. Look, I'll tell you something else. I don't want to mention names, but all right, let the secrets out of the bag. There was someone who... YU, graduate of YU, very important, very big kahila, raised money for YU. And YU would give him honor at every graduation. Suddenly, the honor ended and he no longer plays a role. So I try to find out, why did they cut him out like that? And he was very bitter. He spoke to me in the 60s. They forget about me. So one of the Board of Trustees members, who later becomes chairman of many of the YU important boards, says to me, don't you understand why? He became very active in Bar Ilan. And over the years, whoever YU gave an honorary doctorate to, he would contact them and hit them up for Bar Ilan. A balabas doesn't really... Who's speaking? Who can we?
Yitzchak.
Who?
Yitzchak.
Who's Yitzchak?
Rabbi Reuben.
Rabbi Reuben. Oh, Rabbi Reuben, please don't mute yourself. So no, it doesn't help. Okay. So when YU would contact this balabas for his $1 million donation, he would say, "I already gave it." Who'd you give it to? Oh, this rabbi that you want, that spoke at the graduation, I gave it to him. They would check it out. It was given to Bar Ilan. He didn't know the difference between YU and Bar Ilan. Same thing. If you go with the name Teira Vadas, you're going to wind up the money going to Teira Vadas and not to YU. So they couldn't use it. But anyway, Mada Hayahadut and Sefer Hamada, it's not dat. Dat is much more inclusive. And that's YU, okay? And Rabbi Revel, if he did use it, Torah Mada, well, he was into Chachmat Yisrael. So he used it in the sense of Mada Hayahadut. Yeah, go ahead.
Just one other thing. I remember Rabbi Lyman once took us to Williamsburg. You know, his father was the principal of the high school.
Right, of course, Harold.
So he showed us the original building in Williamsburg, and I think it's Sofner now, but he showed it to us, and he said, notice there are two flag poles out front of the building because they had the Israeli flag and the U.S. flag flying out front because Rev Mendelovich was a Zionist.
Right.
So, like, they wouldn't say this these days, but they had the Israeli flag flying out front.
Right. That's axiomatic that they flew the Israeli flag. It began with Rabbi Gold, who was very close to Rabbi Meir Berlin. But I'll touch upon that on next Sunday. I'm going to introduce you to an article where, believe me, that plays a role with the Israeli flag and tells and all that goes with it. But we want to understand Torah Vadas to be critical and to say our point of view is simple. But Torah Vadas, I'm going to show you next week what was very unique about it. There is something very special that goes back to Mr. Mendelovich, and we'll see next week, Be'ezrat Hashem. As a matter of fact, next week I'll show you that in a certain area, Mr. Mendelovich and the Rav thought exactly the same way, basically. So Be'ezrat Hashem, we'll do the best we can. Are there any more questions?
Rabbi?
Yeah?
I pressure you and I took Rebel courses together. We still speak occasionally.
Who took with you?
I was not trouble for each of her parents.
Wait.
Israel of Midwood paired with the Kolel in Aretz. That's the same Kolel where Chagai is.
That's where Chagai pressure is. And who did
exactly.
You say, who did you say you took?
He was speaking at one of the things when they had something joint from the Kolel. I remember. I think I may have called Pearl about it. I don't remember. You mentioned that there were many who can say they went to Machon Gold. Having lived in Bala Kidwood, I'm sure you know that the Beth Jacob Yeshiva Khan in Philly used to be co-ed, so there are many who can say they learned in Beis Yaakov.
All right. Ein Hachinami, the split was not as easy to do in the past as it is today. As you know, the Rub began co-ed and the Highlight began. They had a big problem with Highlight. Again, it's a question of students. St. Louis.
I went to the day camp.
St. Louis is the story with Rabbi Simcha Krauss. Rabbi Simcha Krauss was a big Talmud chassid of Rabbi Hutner. And how did he move to the left? It all began in St. Louis when he organized the day school there. You got to give him all the credit. And he had to do it co-ed because he said, if I would separate, I would have had four boys and four girls. You can't run schools for four children, but when you have 8 and 10, 12, you can start a first grade. Rabbi Hutner told them...
I saw him in Riverdale. I think it may have been when you spoke there a few years ago.
Yeah, Rabbi Hutner... Rabbi
Gross was living there.
Yeah, Rabbi Hutner told Reb Simcha, you can't have a mixed class. And he broke with Rabbi Hutner. That's where the split begins. And he moved, you know, there's a Chaim Berlin boy who moved to the left gradually, but that St. Louis experience plays a big role in it. All right,
he was on sabbatical, he learned in the mirror.
No, he's a big Talmud Chacham. It's a pleasure to speak with him and learning. He's a big Talmud Chacham, Reb Simcha. He was very close to Rabbi Lichtenstein. So these are real problems with... Then the question is, why doesn't Maimonides separate today? And then you get involved. Once a certain rhythm begins, it's hard to break it. No one asks about Ramaz. Ramaz, all right, is co-ed. Everyone takes for granted it's co-ed. But Maimonides, you'll get the question time and again, why don't they separate today? All right, I have to... I can only say what I live here within my own limited facilities, but my daughters always went to schools that were separate, And my grandchildren too, as far as I know, all the grandchildren are in schools that are separate, and Kanayin Hara, they should only be Matzliach. All right, I want to thank...
I have my letter of acceptance to Flatbush from Rabbi Eliach.
All right.
I went to BTA. I had a choice of one or the other, and at the time, they were still both good schools, and I went to the one that was separate.
All right.
But I have many friends who went there. We used to see each other at basketball games.
Uh-huh. And Rabbi Yehuda Herzl Henkin went to Flatbush. I spoke about him. We dedicated this year yesterday.
And Yossi Klausner went to Ramaz.
And Yosef Klausner went to Ramaz. Zichronim Tzadikim Livracha. All right, thank you very much for honoring me with your presence. And until we meet again in health and happiness, Das Vedanya. Yomo, finish out. I see you're willing to stay here all morning, but...
It doesn't matter to go to sleep anymore.
No, I understand, but I'm talking the students in front of me don't want to leave. That you're on screen is one thing.
He has an extra hour.
But they're sitting here, and who has to come in today? Who teaches here? Rabbi Bednash? Rabbi Bednash. Okay. Okay, leave meeting. All right, we're out. Well, you see how much they appreciate it today, Shia? You should see their faces. And these are world-class, you know, these are Rabbanim and PA. Charlie Hexter's a PhD from Harvard. That's not a small matter. These are world-class people. Morty Tarragon is world-famous. He's an atomic scientist. I don't know if you're aware of that.
He invented the internet.
Yes.
What?
Morty invented the internet, right?
He was one of three in America who put up the internet. And I asked him, how much money did you get? He said, no, it was postdoctoral research. And Al Gore was then a senator, what was he, the governor of Georgia, I think. And he said, we're going to put the internet first in the South. Two of the three were Jewish. The guy had a Jewish name, but he was non-Jewish. So I asked Marty, what did you get? He got nothing. But what he did get, it CV. And he wanted to come in Aliyah, the Weitzman and the Technion were fighting over him. Mm-hmm. You follow it? This is a curriculum reader. It's, you know, that's what makes life. My contract, I told you, with JPS, got me to Israel, Bekavod. They're discouraging, and I understand what went on. But the encyclopedia had been a government project. When it's a government project, again, I don't know how to say it in English, ich komm heint, ich komm morgen. I come today, I come tomorrow. Yeah, government, it's money. There's no rush. They sold it off to a group of Australian investors. Australian investors put in hundreds of thousands of dollars, millions of dollars. They want results.